In this segment, we're going to focus on this very interesting person, Mary Magdalene, who, of course, is in all four Gospels. In all four Gospels, she is the first person, the first of the group of women to the tomb on Easter morning. In John's Gospel, she's the only one. All of her companions have disappeared. So, obviously, a very important person. Who is she? Well, she's known as Mary of Magdala. And that's what Magdalene means, a person who comes from a place called Magdala. And Magdala is a place on the western side, western shore of the Lake of Galilee, still there. It's some very interesting excavations and structures, buildings are going on there right now. And Magdala is an Aramaic word that means tower. Aramaic, you know, is a language very closely related to Hebrew. It's the language of the Persian Empire, the ancient Persian Empire. And after the Persian invasions in 7th, 6th century BCE, it became the common language of the Jews, of Judea. And it was the language that was spoken in Galilee. It was Jesus' first language. It's very, very closely related to Hebrew. And Magdala is in Aramaic, and it means tower. If you look on the picture there, we have in Latin script Magdala, and just below it we have Hebrew, Migdal. In Hebrew, Migdal means tower, and you can see here an example of how closely these two languages are related, Migdal and Magdala. It's just a change in vowels. And so it is a town that is known. And in the New Testament time, it actually had a different name, Tarachea, which means salted fish. And that's an indicator of what its main business was, the salting of fish. To preserve fish, they didn't have refrigerators, you know. So to carry fish and be able to have it later, you dried it out and salted it. It must have been very salty by the time they ate it. And that's what this village was known for. There are other theories about a tower, that she wasn't really from there, but she was a tower of strength. Well, okay, I mean, you can do that if you want. But basically, it's simply saying that she is from this town of Magdala. So I had already mentioned Luke 8, 1-3, where she is the first one named, and John, the dialogue between Jesus and Mary Magdalene at the tomb on Easter morning. One New Testament scholar suggested that Mary Magdalene was to the women disciples what Peter was to the male disciples. The leader, recognized leader and spokesperson. Whatever you make of the role of Peter in later generations, when you read the Gospels, all of them, you really see him as a spokesperson. I mean, he's somebody who is recognized by the others as a leader, a natural leader, you know. And that probably Mary Magdalene was that to the women disciples, and I think that's an interesting take on it. Now, Mary Magdalene is confused with other Marys. She even gets confused with the mother of Jesus once in a while, because everybody's named Mary. And we have Mary of Bethany, who is presumably the same as Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. And why all these Marys? Well, there's a possible, a suggested reason for why we have so many Marys in the Gospel. Studies have been done on names of both men and women, popular names, right around this time in the burials surrounding Jerusalem. That's where we have enough evidence for this. Jewish people in the cemeteries surrounding ancient Jerusalem. And something like 25 to 30% of names were either of women were either Miriam or Mariam, which are variations on the same name, and they all translate as Mary. So in English we have all these Marys. In Greek sometimes Mariam, sometimes Miriam. But it was just a really popular name, and I think that that's why we have so many women by that name, which creates the confusion, you see. So remember, we have Mary of Bethany, who is the one who in John's Gospel, just before the Passion, anoints Jesus' head with perfume. There's a foot washer in Luke chapter 7, an unknown woman in the city. This is up in Galilee. Jesus is at dinner with Pharisees. This unknown woman who was a sinner comes in and washes his feet with her tears and dries them with her hair. And this causes scandal, and Jesus says, my host, messed up by not offering me water to wash my feet. You know, if you spend much time today, even walking around in the Holy Land, your feet, your shoes get very dusty. And they had sandals and open sandals. And so it was the hospitality thing to do when somebody arrived at your house. And usually it was a slave who did it, who washed the feet. And Jesus says, "You didn't do that to me. She's doing it." And this will be told in memory of her wherever these stories are told. And by the late 5th century, some interpreters also take this story and put it together with Mary of Bethany anointing Jesus with perfume, and put that together with Mary Magdalene. And so the whole thing, all of these distinct characters, get associated with the name of Mary Magdalene. So there's a whole confusion that happens. But what is the real role of Mary Magdalene? What does she really stand for here? Well, remember that in John's Gospel, she is at the tomb by herself, and she recognizes Jesus when he calls her name, and he says, "Go tell my disciples that I am ascending to my God and your God." And that line, "Go tell my disciples," is the basis for a very early tradition that calls her the Apostle of the Apostles. By the early 3rd century, that's attested. And it simply means that she's the one who gave the news of the resurrection of Jesus. And so we have this image of her and this tradition about her as being the Apostle of the Apostles. And that gives rise to a whole tradition about Mary Magdalene in the early church, to being a teacher and one who received revelation from Jesus, special revelation from Jesus, to pass it on. And she is sometimes depicted holding an egg, which she is in this contemporary painting. And that's because of a legend that she went to Rome and she preached the gospel to the Emperor Tiberius, who said to her, I cannot believe what you're saying any more than she had an egg in her hand, that the egg would turn red. And of course, upon his saying that, the egg turned red. Here the egg is white, but she's sometimes depicted holding a red egg. And both of those are reflections of this legendary story. But the interesting thing about it is that she was a proclaimer of the gospel. She was the one who was, in this story, sent to preach the gospel even to the emperor. That she was a recipient of special revelation from Jesus. Because in that story in John, in chapter 20, Jesus says, go tell my disciples. She goes and tells them, and she says, and these are the things he said to me. What are the things he said to her? It's not spelled out. And that gives rise to the tradition that at that moment, that Jesus gave her secret, hidden revelation. There is a text from the 4th or 5th century that's called the Gospel of Mary. And it never says Mary Magdalene. Some have said that this is meant to be the mother of Jesus, but most interpreters would say, no, it's meant to be Mary Magdalene. Where the disciples, the male disciples, are all gathered with Mary Magdalene. And Peter says, no, sorry, not Peter, it's one of the others, says, Mary, what are the things, the secret things that Jesus said to you? And she then says some things which are pretty esoteric. I mean, they're hard to understand. They're kind of in riddles, you know. And Peter, at the end of it, says, huh, I don't believe that Jesus really said these things to you. And it's Levi who says, Peter, you're always giving her problems. Stop doing that. We have to accept the fact that the Savior loved her more than he loved us. So what kind of a community would have treasured stories like this? That it had to be communities that really revered her memory and that recognized her as an important figure in the early church and the apostle to the apostles. She also, of course, gets confused with the Mary of Bethany, the sister of Martha. And this is Caravaggio portraying Mary Magdalene as Mary of Bethany. Coquettish, wouldn't you say? I mean, she's and of course she's in contemporary clothing of Caravaggio's day. And she's quite lovely, and she's got a mirror. That's a mirror that she's holding in her left hand. And Martha is trying to talk to her, and Martha's head is shaded in dark, and so you don't really see much of Martha. But the light is illuminating that face of Mary, and it's just a really interesting portrayal, which, of course, is nothing like what we think the historical Mary Magdalene would have looked like. But it's a portrayal of her. And then we have Titian, who portrays Mary Magdalene, the repentant prostitute. Yes, and this comes off of the passage in Luke 7. This, remember I said it's a confusion of Mary Magdalene with that figure. And that woman, a certain woman in the city who was a sinner. Now, it doesn't say what kind of sinner, but in that culture, if you say a woman is a sinner, it means some kind of irregularity about her sexual life. Doesn't necessarily mean prostitute. Doesn't necessarily mean professional, taking money, you know, but it's a sexual irregularity of some kind. And in the course of centuries and the interpretation of that passage, she became a prostitute. And then, as I said, in the late 5th century, she gets connected with Mary Magdalene. So then Mary Magdalene becomes a prostitute, which she wasn't before, several centuries after her death. And then she gets connected with the whole idea of a desert ascetic, and I'll show you another picture of that in a minute. But it's this idea of the repentant prostitute is still titillating, you know, and she's always portrayed in this guise with her, you know, the clothes kind of slipping down. I mean, yeah, it's going to fall over her breast the next, you know, vaguely, or no, that's not what I meant to say, barely concealed sexuality. And she gets confused here with a figure called Mary of Egypt, another legendary figure in the early church. at the time of the desert ascetics, when a number of people, men but also women, were taking to the desert and spending their lives as ascetics in the desert. And Mary of Egypt, the story about her is that she was a famous prostitute. And she decided to go on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, because everybody was doing it. Everybody was going on pilgrimage. And when she got there to Jerusalem and she tried to enter the Church of the Anastasis, the Resurrection, which is what we then the Crusaders called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, some mysterious force kept her back. She wasn't able to walk in the church. She was instantly converted. And then she could walk in the church. And she repented of her sinful life, and she took off for the desert and was never seen again until she died. She dressed like a man, and they didn't know, the other ascetics, desert ascetics, didn't know she was a woman until they were going to bury her when she died. So Mary Magdalene, in the imagination, artistic imagination, gets connected with Mary of Bethany, and that's what you have going on here. So this is not the only one. There are a lot of depictions of, it's titled Mary Magdalene, and it's this repentant sinner in the desert bemoaning her past sins. And then she is the desert ascetic, you see, and this is Donatello's depiction of Mary Magdalene, Mary of Egypt, now the half-starved, mostly starved, desert ascetic. So these are all some of the ways in which Mary Magdalene has been portrayed. And in more recent scholarship, she's gone back to being an apostle, the apostle of the apostles, because we sort of peeled off the layers of development of tradition. So don't let anybody tell you Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. That is later invention. Mary Magdalene herself was a disciple, a faithful disciple of Jesus, who was recognized by the male disciples and very early in the tradition was honored as an apostle. So, modern imagination about Mary Magdalene has hung on to, at least dramatic projections, have hung on to the prostitute because that's, well, let's face it, more interesting, you know. The famous prostitute who repents and now she's converted. So I give you two examples here. One is Jesus Christ Superstar. Those of you of a certain age may remember this. Those of you who are younger probably haven't seen it, but it was a wonderful musical, a depiction of the life of Jesus. And Mary Magdalene is of course a repentant prostitute and a lover of Jesus and lover in many different ways, and this is one of the modern depictions of a tradition that has gone on for a while. I didn't even mention also there's another tradition about Mary Magdalene, Martha, and Lazarus getting in a boat, going across the Mediterranean, landing at Marseille in France, and so you have a whole tradition about Mary Magdalene there too. She's this person who just shows up everywhere because she's so interesting. But in Jesus Christ Superstar, there is the suggestion of a romantic relationship between the two of them, and that's certainly not the first of the modern suggestions of that. And then we come to Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code. Now, the Da Vinci Code is a wonderful novel. His history is atrocious. He absolutely slaughters history. And so don't believe much of the history that you read in the Da Vinci Code. But it's a wonderful novel. And as one of my friends used to say, please note where in the bookstore it is. It's under fiction. This is not history. This is fiction. And it's imagination. And of course, in the Da Vinci Code, also we have a romantic relationship between Jesus and Mary. So Mary Magdalene functions as a figure who is so fascinating to people that she is, there's just all kinds of stories about her, and she gets confused in many different ways. So what can we really presume about the real Mary Magdalene? Would the real Mary Magdalene please stand up, you know? We've got a woman who is attracted to, as a disciple to Jesus, a faithful disciple. She is not poor. She is providing some of the support for this group of disciples. And she is not necessarily young. And so we do not need to picture Mary Magdalene as a youngster, as a young nubile person. You know, she's wealthy, and she's either married or maybe widowed. There's no mention of her husband, whereas there is a mention of Joanna's husband in that passage in Luke 8. She's probably widowed, and which would mean she could be of a certain age. And she is faithful in her line of discipleship, in her life of discipleship, and after the death of Jesus, continues as a faithful disciple with the group of other disciples. I think that's really what we can say about the historical Mary Magdalene. And then we have all of this wonderful imagination that flows from this fascinating character.